Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And this is The Food Fight, a frank discussion of food culture featuring Australia's top chefs, producers and experts.
We'll chat about real issues and go places others won't.
This podcast travels throughout the country and we acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather and speak.
And we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging.
This episode, we're chatting with YouTube and Instagram sensation, That's What I Reckon. He joins us to talk about his journey into the social media spotlight, how his different approach to cooking reaches new audiences, his journey with mental health and how that translates to hospitality, and about his new book, Death to Jar Sauce. Hope you like it. Do we just introduce you as That's What I Reckon, or do you have a full name?
No, That's What I Reckon. That's the name. That's the show.
That's the official.
Yeah.
Cool. How'd you get into cooking?
I suppose by necessity and, being on the rock and roll for a while made it something that I suppose it was necessary as it tends to be cooking. I know in my early 20s, I used to just fucking eat a lot of shit and, you know, I was a bit of someone struggling quite a lot, you know, as a lot of people you just tend to eat garbage. I ended up falling in love with roasting, actually. Like, I started roasting food and and then kind of, yeah, I suppose I've just kind of taught. I've cooked a lot of stuff with my old man over the years. He's an incredible cook. But, yeah, in terms of actually getting stuck into it, it was probably my early 20s, like mid-20s. And then, yeah, I've really, like, fell in love with it and gone absolutely mad for it in the last, you know, long while.
Did you ever work in a kitchen anywhere?
No.
No, okay.
No.
Because you seem to have, like, really good, like, fundamentals down and stuff like that. Did you sort of, like, research cooking? Like, I mean, there's home cooks and then there's home cooks who are really anal about keeping sharp knives and having the right cookware and you know, al dente pasta and all that sort of thing, you know what I mean? People that really pay attention. Like, how'd you sort of go down the rabbit hole and pick up all those fundamentals?
Well, lots of YouTube, of reading recipe books, and like I fascinate and obsess over one thing for a while. So it was, you know, pork for a while. I was getting obsessed with the pork crackling, and, you know, cooking pork bellies and then pork shoulders, and then, you know, I would, like, cook it every night of the week to the point where I'm just stacked on the kilos trying to nail a pork belly. And thankfully I've lived in big share houses, so I've had a lot of people to feed, and, you know, it's kind of, that's the way I do things. I watch the way people do things and try and practice and get good. Dad's really, really good with a knife, and I've got a couple of mates who are pretty with it in the kind of cooking space that helped me work some things out too. So it's just been a practice thing. I'm quite good at imitating things. So I've just
you can only really get that comfortable, like, holding a knife from just holding a knife a lot. Like, there's not really any substitute for just practice. And, like, you can sort of tell when you look at someone and just, like, the way they hold themselves in the kitchen, the way they hold a knife, the way they chop, that they've done it a lot. Like, you can't really imitate that. It's just like a comfortability thing with it. And it just comes, like I said, it comes from just repeating and being a little bit weird and obsessed with, like, when I started cooking,
cutting the shit out of yourself too.
Yeah. It's trial and error.
Have you taught people, like, you would have taught apprentices how to chop before and stuff like that? Teaching someone how to chop properly who's not an accomplished cook is so funny. They look so uncoordinated when they're trying to chop an onion. You're like, this is how you hold it to be safe, and this is a sharp knife. And they do it so slowly and so uncoordinated.
It's just, it just looks so awkward. And it's like, especially when you, you kind of have to remember then, like, when you get, you know, first year apprentices, or even when we used to do like cookery school at Cavo with like the punters. And like, you'd have to let them like cut one thing up on a class, and you'd be like, oh God, like, what the fuck are they doing? They're all going to end up fucking cutting themselves. Which is, it's just so awkward. And when you're used to it, when you're good at it, it's just so natural. And it doesn't take a second thought, and it just kind of happens. And you just slap into an onion and it fucking falls apart. And then you watch someone just, you can't do it. And it's kind of almost unfathomable. Like, why is that so hard for you when you've done it 1,000 times?
You've got a really sharp thing in your hand and you're trying to be quite fluent with something that is, in effect, quite dangerous, I suppose. Like, you know, you're going to fucking cut your finger off.
Yeah. It's funny. Similar thing when I started cooking before I cooked professionally, it was just at home, and it was just, same little weird obsession. My first thing was like spicy food, which is like had the thing of like trying to eat spicier and spicier chili based dishes. The first cookbook I got was like some like, it was like the whole cookbook about chilies. And I just cooked from that for like months. And that was my first little obsession.
Oof.
Yeah, weird one. My family hated it. It was just all too hot.
So, Nat, tell us about the sort of journey into being a, I mean, where you are now is like a online food personality / comedian, but it didn't begin in the food world. No. Like, where were you? At what point did you sort of decide, I want to have a crack at presenting this, you know, irreverent style of, you know, YouTube stuff or Instagram videos and things like that, and have a real crack at it? Like, where were you and sort of what was the thought process into going into it? It started off as a bit of fun, or were you like, this is something I want to do?
Yeah, it started off as a bit of fun. I've always been someone who's taken the piss quite a lot and had a laugh. Like, I struggle with the normalcy of the world around me quite a lot, and I'm trying to find a way to survive it by taking the piss out of it usually. So that made sense for me to kind of start. I just start making videos and things, you know, mucking around with stuff. But the more and more the more and more I did it, the more excited I got about it and the more ideas I'd have. I've constantly got so many fucking ideas for jokes and videos and things and songs and stuff that I'm always kind of creating things. But, it started off as me, you know, just making strange short skit videos. And then, it's grown into something more adventurous over the years.
Was there a point, like, at what point did you decide you wanted to sort of go hard into it and try to do something with it? Because I think that, like, for a lot of creators out there, a lot of stuff starts off as a bit of fun, and then you get to a point where you're like, well, I'm not making any money out of this, but I'm putting shitloads of time into it, so it's either I keep this as just a hobby that takes up a shitload of my time, or I double down on it and try to get to a place where I can make some money out of it and continue doing this because it's what I love to do. Like, at what point was there a point like that for you?
Yeah, I suppose so, but it's like anything you love. You know, I've been a musician my whole life, and that's never going to make you any fucking money unless you strike it lucky, or, you know, like anything, you'll work hard to make it work. But in terms of turning it into a career, I just love doing this, and I would do it at work, you know, much to the disappointment of my employers, I'm sure. But, like, I'm constantly making and creating things, and I see shit all the time, and I'm always kind of on for that stuff. So I just, the fact that it turned into now my job, a very, very full-time job, is awesome I don't know. I did my trajectory has always been, I want to create and I want to do, I want to take the piss. I want to have a laugh. I want to create shit all the time. It's kind of I freak out if I'm not making something or doing a thing. And I don't have any big career aspirations as, you know, someone in the workforce. I'm just, you know, moving furniture or doing, you know, not that that's not a suitable career for someone. I'm just saying I've got kind of, it facilitated a means to an end. I just want to keep making stuff. And the more ideas I got, the more serious I got. And then I decided to go absolutely nuts on it and just see how hard I can push it and see if I can turn it into my job. And yeah, we even went to the United States to try and make a go of it there and like get more adventurous and go to Roswell and, you know, go to the cat conventions and all sorts of weird shit. I wanted to see just how wild I could go on this. And the thing that ended up turning it really into my job is the cooking thing. Mm. Is it like the amount of money I spent on making this channel before for nothing? You know, there's no return. The return is, you know, like anything, any creative aspiration, you spend a lot of money on your instruments and your things you love, you know, because it makes me happy doing that. But
was that first cooking video, was that, you know, did you see that being a sort of series or a collection of videos, or was it just a one-off, let's do a cooking thing, you know, let's fuck jar sauce for this episode, or let's do, you know, was there any thought of I'm going to make a few of these?
Well, I think you kind of didn't know what was going to happen at that point because the whole coronavirus thing was going a bit ape shit.
Yeah, it was like early March, your first one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's when things were starting to get a bit hairy.
Mm.
My tours just started to get cancelled and like things were looking, well, the lockdown was imminent kind of thing. So I didn't really sit and plan it as a series or anything, but I'm not, you know, I had made kind of some shit cooking videos in my past that were just a bit whatever, but I'd never realized them. The jar sauce is a great target because it fucking sucks. But I've got heaps to say about it. And that's all I kind of just need. This is a great topic for now. Everyone's inside and I'm like, I can see everyone's buying this fucking stupid shit. Not everyone, but you know what I mean?
Mm.
People are buying this along with all the dunny roll and the microwave fucking pizzas and shit, or frozen pizzas. I'm like, well, I've got heaps to say about that. So fucking, I'm just kind of on the next thing there. And that went so nuts. I edited that at a pub. So like, I didn't think that, you know, I was at a pub, so well, obviously wasn't that serious yet. You know, but within a week or two, I think it was like full lockdown and that video went fucking nuts.
Mm.
I've had a few videos go pretty well before, but not in the cooking space. Like I've made some other.
So it was almost more a piece of observational comedy than a cooking video.
Yeah. And it's turned into, well, I fucking love my cooking and that's like, I'm lucky that I've realized that that's something that people are enjoying and that's worked. That's been a great way for me to pump a fucking shitload of my over-opinionated waffle and jokes out and create some fun content.
Mm. Do you remember when that first video started going nuts? Like, was there someone that shared it, or was there like a tipping point where you're like, holy shit, this thing is going mental? Like,
the numbers, excuse me. See, the numbers just started to skyrocket like really quickly. Like I always watch my videos and see how they're trending and what's working. And this just kept fucking climbing. And then my phone started to ring. And then I started getting TV channels contacting me wanting to get me to sign things, and you know, like that's when I was like, shit, there's something fucking pretty wild about this going on.
And that was after one video.
Yeah, I think that was after the first video went, the millions of views pretty quickly. And then I was like, oh, we'd be a dickhead not to make another one. I've got plenty of things I'm cooking, so like made another one, and then it just went more and more fucking nuts. The more offers and things started to turn up, and I'm like, shit, I don't know what to do. I'm gonna need to get a manager here. Just fucking getting a bit out of control.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, I was pretty apprehensive. I've always just been I don't want to brand a line with things. Mm. Says me sitting in front of a Colgate. I don't want to. Yeah, they're not big into like selling the idea for anything. It's like I love this. I love what I'm doing. It's not. I'm not going to make an ad for a superannuation company. It doesn't make sense, you know. Mm. So I always just said no to stuff. I'm just habitually like, nah, sorry, can't. I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to sign anything. I'm not going to make a video with you. So when these offers came in, I'm like, shit, this is actually a chance to like. I've lost a fucking tour. Like I can, maybe there's some opportunity here, but I need to watch it because I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I don't know who these people are and what I'm signing here. So it's probably a good idea to look at getting some help there.
Did you sort of have a sit down and sort of think what direction do I want to go with this? Or was it just like, I'm just going to keep making these videos for now? Because like, as you say, people are coming at you from, large organizations and stuff like that. Like you probably could have immediately gone down some other path rather than just stay true to what you do and what you like doing and who you are and making these cool videos. Like, yeah. Was there a moment where you're like, well, I could immediately start doing something different?
I wanted to, the stand-up tour was really what I wanted to be doing. I was performing live. I just love being live and being on stage. So that's what I wanted to do, get the tour going and be a live comic and do that stuff. But, seeing the videos will kind of help facilitate that audience, finding more audience and stuff. But I kind of didn't really know what the fuck was going on. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I just knew that I needed to. It's like, shit, don't sign anything. Don't fucking move too quickly. Just ask some advice from people who know what the fuck they're talking about.
Mm.
I thought the tours and the making the videos, I'm just going to keep plugging as I am. I'll just keep making more of these cooking videos while the lockdown happens and then I'll come back out and the tours will kick back off and we'll just...
Did you feel much pressure making that second video after the first one kicked off? Was it like, shit, what did I do last time? How was I funny last time? How do I do it again?
Got to be honest with you, not really, because I was just like, fuck yeah, well, that's actually easy because I can make another one of those, no sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so much fucking food I can make. This is great.
Yeah, and you just talk shit about whatever you want.
Yeah, but the stress is getting it down to... At that time, I was trying to make it as short as possible, like whole recipe, 3 minutes, go, But making that work in a share house, and I was living, I was subletting a space and living out of my bag, and so I wasn't, all my shit's still in storage because I thought I was going back overseas, so it was a bit tricky. I was filming all that shit on my phone and, using lamps that we could find in the house to try and light the kitchen and,
I mean that was kind of part of the sort of the I think that's why people sort of related to it, because you just look like a sort of a normal bloke cooking in the kitchen and just having a bit of banter. Like it was quite relatable.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was, I suppose. Mm. Yeah, or what it is. Mm. Yeah,
I want to ask a bit more about the sort of fuck jar sauce and packet ingredients and food type of thing. Like, you mentioned before that was a thing that you could basically just direct a lot of, jokes at and make fun of and take the piss out of, and something that everyone can relate to in that way. But has it been a thought of you that there's something more to that? Because I think one thing that your cooking videos do that a lot of cooking content online doesn't is reach a more diverse audience in terms of, just like social demographics, I think. There's a stereotype of like the tradie who eats pies and doesn't cook and, you know, whatever. And I know a few of them. And it is a bit of a stereotype, cliche, whatever. But I know people like that who don't cook that enjoy your videos and would never fucking sit down and watch a Bon Appetit video about how to get the crispiest pork belly. You know, yes. Like, never in the world. Like, have you thought about how reaching that audience might contribute to overall sort of food literacy and that sort of thing?
It's interesting, hey. I don't... Yeah, it's the way I've tried to suggest that the jar sauce is the problem is that it's not particularly creative. It's not very, it's a bit whatever, you know, and there's enough of fucking whatever going on in life, you know, just, this is a bit fucking, I get it. Like, I get why it's there, but you know, I'm not a parent, for example. I know it's like, fuck, I've got a lot going on. I don't need to be, you know, Bon Appetit crackling the pork, like you say. For the kids, you know, you just want to get the shit done. I think what I'm doing is I'm just, you know, it's just calling a spade a bit, you know. It's like, this is fucking, this is boring. Let's have a laugh. This is fun. It just cut the shit out of the chat around intimidating people that are cooking. It's like, it's okay that some stuff is fiddly and, but I suppose what I'm trying to represent is something that's a bit like, it doesn't, a lot of this shit doesn't really fucking matter, you know. It's just, and wing it a bit, you know. If you fuck it up, who cares? Just fucking try it again.
I think, like, when I was just a young cook, cooking at home, like, realizing that you could make, you know, things that normally come in a jar at home is actually quite a revelation to some people. Like, people just don't quite realize. And definitely don't realize how sort of easy it is.
And how much better it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You fucking use, like, you stew down some fresh tomatoes, you put a couple of fucking things in it, and away you get done, and that kicks the absolute living shit out of any fucking jar sauce trash.
Yeah, and it's
fucking easy.
Like, hard to fuck up as well. Like, you, like,
yeah,
bolognese sauce. It's like like, I make like a normal bolognese sauce, and I chop some veggies and sweat them off, put some tomato in, and cook it for a while, and people just like freak out, like, "Oh my god, this is the best bolognese!" And you're like, "Didn't do much at all. Just you know, jar of passata." Done. So I think it's kind of a, like, it's low risk, high reward cooking for people when you just make something from scratch.
Yeah, and there's shit that just fucking works, right? The stuff that is going to work if you use that and bung that with it. The amounts don't hugely matter, but that, and you feel good. It's like, fuck, and particularly if you can give that to someone. Like, I made that. There you go. How fucking good is that shit? You know, that feels great. Love that.
Especially said, living in a share house is a lot of social currency if you're the one who can cook.
Yeah. I love that job. Give me that fucking job every day. Love that shit. I'll fucking bulldoze my way into the kitchen. Like, what's fucking in the morning texting the whole house? If I was to make this, this, or this, or this, who'd want to eat this? You know, just fucking love it.
Did you ever consider becoming a chef or going into professional cookery? Was that ever a thought in your mind?
I kind of did. I've had mates that are chefs, and Dad did some training in a kitchen in Paris and just conveyed just how fucking hardcore that is. And I'm someone who, in at least in a workspace, struggles to, if I'm overworked in a environment that demands a lot of me, while I kind of struggle quite a bit in my head, I don't tend to last very long, hold jobs down, and I didn't see that as working out well. Plus, I love it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to turn it into my job, which I've strangely done now anyway. But no, I love it. It was like, that's my thing. I love the little cookie. I don't want to fuck that up and turn it into my job, you know. Yeah. But I don't know if I'd last very long in a commercial kitchen.
Yeah, it definitely.
I'm not pretending I would, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely something that it takes away. Like, I can't remember last time I cooked at home. Now I've been working so much recently. Yeah. Like, definitely takes that joy of cooking at home for friends and family. You're like, oh fuck, more cooking.
Yeah, right. Yeah, my friends that are chefs are pulling these fucking 80-hour weeks and shit. Like, fucking hell, and it's crazy. I'm so admirable. to put that much effort into and still cooking want dinner. Food, you know? Fucking. But yeah, no, didn't go down the apprenticeship road.
Mm. Now, is it surreal to be in the place that you are now with such a massive following, doing what you love to do, which is cooking and like a combination of cooking and comedy, and being able to make a living out of it and now having a cookbook, you know, the prospect of future tours and working on that comedy side of things. Mm. Like, what's going on in your head now in terms of like, this is where I've found myself in life?
I'm really grateful. I'm really profoundly grateful that I don't have to be in the back of a hot truck right now, shifting furniture around anymore. That I'm remind myself of every day. It's like fucking all that relentless video making and, you know, doing shit. It's nice that that's actually translated to something that I'm able to do for a fucking job with my partner too. You know, we're both full-time do this. It's fucking awesome. But the pressure I put on myself to do this stuff and make it fucking shit hot, and I really, really like have a lot of respect for what I'm doing, and I want to do it better, and I want to be better at it. And it's weird to hear myself say shit like that because I have been a fucking just mess most of my life. So having this has been a real, very grateful, very lucky that I've got something that finally I can actually make a living out of that's not, you know, not me absolutely flogging myself to fucking earn a buck.
I think that effort comes through in the book. I think I definitely like when it got sent through and wasn't quite sure what to expect from a book from somebody who's not a chef who, you know, did some YouTube videos, but it's looks spectacular and it looks like a lot of effort has gone into it when it could easily have been a you know, a couple of photos of you and some dishes and some recipes slapped together.
Yeah, it's an overachieving effort. Each recipe like has this, you know, I speak in metaphor all the fucking time, and that's kind of part of my comedy. And I'm mates with these artists. They're all fucking incredible. I'm, again, really lucky to have such talented people around me. But they get, like, we're mates, so they get my jokes, and they've turned this into these comics, and it's fucking hilarious. Like, we've got, you know, me as the Terminator making a lasagna. Yeah, you know, shit, like, that's fucking awesome.
The one that got me was the pool room rissoles with Daryl Kerrigan shooting, like cracking a set.
Oh, so good, good.
That's hilarious. The Castle's like my favorite movie.
We did an episode of that one on the channel where I dressed as Daryl and like we tried to reenact the Bonnie Doon scene in the car with Jules. We dressed up and I put eyeshadow because I can't grow facial hair on my top lip. It was fucking hilarious. So much fun.
Yeah. What was it your idea to do this comic format for the book? Like, and like, because I know that, like, I mean, from publishing books myself and you know, knowing a bit about how the publishing industry works, publishers want to have a say in what it looks like. And having a cookbook with no photos of food is a fucking risky angle.
Yeah, and just drawings of it. Yeah. It's been the publisher has been so hugely supportive of and put a lot of trust in me and my ideas. It's been pretty, you know, there's been some negotiating of things, of course, but like the first, we had a bit of a dip our toe in the fucking pool in the first book where I had like 9 recipes done this way in the first book amongst the other stuff that I had in there that was more that conversational piss-taking shit that I do on the channel. With the cooking stuff in there and people, it was enough to see that that worked. So I think, you know, this idea was, you know, that offer the idea, do you want to do this as a full cookbook? Is they've been hugely supportive. So I'm Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's a weird fucking way to have a cookbook that's a fucking, in effect, a comic like novel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it seems to be one of those cookbooks that's not just a recipe book. It's kind of like you can kind of just sort of sit there and have a look at it and have a read of it and
yeah,
like and sort of flip through and read it as if it's a comic.
Yeah, I'm glad.
I read the majority of cookbooks out there. People flick through and they look at the pictures and then they might cook a recipe or two, but you don't really read it. For this one, you can kind of read.
It's awesome. That's kind of what I'm trying to go for. Like, you might not want to make fish cakes, but you can have a fucking good laugh at that recipe. Mm-hmm. It's a visual journey and it's just slammed full of jokes. So, yeah, I'm hoping that even if you don't feel like cooking that, you'll still want to read it. And maybe there's something in there you'd be like, fuck, that made me laugh. Maybe I want to actually try and cook that. Mm. That'd be really cool.
Were there people coming to you who just wanted to put out some fucking fluff cookbook just on the back of the YouTube popularity, the video popularity? Did you have kind of people approaching you with this like the wrong idea?
I mean, there's been plenty of people that have approached me with the wrong idea, but in terms of the cookbook thing was definitely part of, I suppose, the natural trajectory of what was going on. It's like, well, you
do a book.
What about this idea? Yeah, it was pretty popular. I was pretty, for the first thing, I was pretty staunch on not, I was careful not to strictly brand myself as this YouTuber chef or cook, you know. I didn't want that to be it. And so it was a bit of like seeing who was into the idea that I had and who most suited this kind of, we'll do some of that and some of this. And yeah, obviously it was a pretty popular idea, the cookbook thing, but I wanted to do something a bit more weird with the first thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And a bit more control and say in it, I guess. So I think about it must be hard that when you start getting these offers come in and it's like, oh, that's going to be some money. It must be tempting to say just yes, let's just snatch this little bit of time and see what we can make of it, or kind of wait it out and try and find the right fit and do something you're actually kind of proud of.
Yeah, I think it's important not to just fucking take money, because it's like that's not what's important to me. What's important to me is what I'm doing. Like, and I don't want that's what I reckon to be. I didn't want that first fucking book to be like, oh, suddenly that worked on your channel, so now boom, cookbook. You know, I still want to take what I'm doing seriously. And there's a mission fucking plan here.
Mm.
I'm trying to do as much stuff as I can and not box my shit in too much. Obviously, there's a shitload of cooking going on, but it's not going to be the only thing that I do creatively, particularly like as a stand-up and a muso. And, you know, I don't want to just do that. So there was, the money thing was definitely less important to me than having that idea be the right thing. You know, it's got to work. And without compromising my shit, I don't want to just fucking pump out some cookbook. It's like I do want to do that, but I want to take some time to get that right. And so, yeah.
Yeah. As someone who's interested in doing a lot of creative stuff, and you mentioned music and stand-up, like you've found success in your YouTube channel and cooking, but sort of, I mean, you have to work pretty hard to keep that going, right? Like you have to work pretty hard to keep just that aspect of your success going and to continue to grow that. Is it difficult to find time to work on stand-up? Like, I mean, to, you know, stand-up's no easy feat to get out there and have a set that will work in front of an audience and things like that. And the same goes for music, and both are notoriously difficult to make money at.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to sort of like find time for the other creative stuff when you know, all right, well, this is the successful thing that I'm doing. This is the thing that makes me money. You know, Is it difficult to go, all right, well, I want to write a new album or something like that and spend all this time on this project and kind of take some time away from the cooking stuff or whatever it might be?
Yeah, it's tough. It's really busy. It's really busy.
Mm.
I've tried to, the lockdowns made it harder because there's less, there's a lot to manage there. I've got to fucking manage my head too and still do what I need to do to be okay to make this stuff as well, like create this shit. There's a fucking, it's a lot of work. You got to keep it up and you got to keep engaging and, you know, but I like that. I like doing that stuff, but now I can't, like, it's now such a job and the numbers don't lie kind of thing, you know. It's like, well, if you fucking dip out for too long, you got to work your way back into that level of engaging with an audience. Just depends what's important at the time. Excuse me. I'm going to play a bit of a long game, you know. Like, I have to manage the amount that I can fucking put out and put out something that's proper, like, it's good fucking quality shit, and create a book and, you know, write music and, you know, write a new show and exercise and fucking, there's a lot fucking going on. It's got to, it's just the time management.
It's funny like that. I think like anyone who's got like a solid work ethic always just makes themselves busy no matter what it is that they're doing. Like, or and especially when it comes to people who are in sort of creative industries and things like that, where it's not like you just go to a job from 9 to 5 and if you're being your own boss, it's like you just make yourself busy. And there's probably people out there who reckon, oh, like dream job, like, you know, Nat's like making these funny, you know, YouTube cooking videos, being himself, taking the piss, like, but don't have an understanding of the actual work ethic and the actual work that goes behind it. It's like sitting at a computer editing a video for 5 hours straight or whatever it might be isn't necessarily fun. Like, it might be fine, but it's not necessarily, it's not like going to the beach. No, you know, like
and it's certainly, and it's certainly like it takes me 3-4 days to edit a video.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot of work to make the, all that into, I edit all that stuff on my own. So, like, I do have my partner help me do that shit, but it's a fucking lot of work. It's a lot of work. Yeah, it's a real trick. Obviously, people don't see that. Or a lot of people assume that I have someone edit the stuff for me too, which would be fucking great, thanks, if someone knows how to do that. The problem is what I do is so my style is so inside my editing and shit. It's I'm really managed.
It's hard to let go of those sorts of things though. I think that like a lot of the time people, I mean, when it comes to editing this podcast and editing video, like we've done video for this podcast and stuff in the past, it's so easy to sort of hold on to like, this is how I do it. And I reckon someone else is going to fuck it up if I let them take over. But I think
fully.
A lot of the time, like when it comes to these sorts of creative pursuits, if in 10 years from now you're still putting out video content and you're still editing it yourself, you know like it wouldn't where you expect to be, you know what I mean? There needs to be, and it's the same with chefs too, you need to learn how to relinquish control of certain things to give yourself more time to do what you do best.
That's it. I think it's the next stage of learning how to do what you do better is to ask for some help. But you know, it's going to be work creating that help too, you know, like you've got to show like you would, you know, in the kitchen, you've got to show someone how to do, if this is something that represents you and you've got to hand that work over to someone, that's fucking terrifying because if they fuck it up, then that's not you. You've lost a you bit of your creation. And then it's, you know, you've got to show someone how to do that. And, you know, of course you'll need to sweep over that yourself. I don't know how you edit your potties and stuff, but yeah, the having to, scary, giving someone what you've been doing and asking them to help you with it.
It's interesting though, because I work on other podcasts and things like that. And I think that one of the, I mean, this is just like, now we're just talking about the best way to work. But one of the things that I've found is, because I edit other people's podcasts now, and it's all about, it seems to me, it's about developing relationships with individuals. Like, and not sort of thinking, all right, well, there's, you know, a whole world of people out there and none of them are going to be able to do this like I do it. It's like finding that person that you are able to communicate well with and refining and honing them as your producer that gets them in your head, in a way of like, you know, what you want. And then they're kind of making the same decisions that you would at a point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to kind of create a thing together for a little bit so that we all know how each other work. And yeah, it's fucking bang on.
Yeah.
I used to have a weird thing like that when I used to work for my previous boss. And if I'd ever come up with a dish, it had to be like a me dish, but through the lens of the head chef. So I like knew what he, like the ingredients he liked and the techniques he liked and how he liked to play. So I'd try and like take something that I wanted to do and just like funnel it through his head so I'd get away with it. So it'd be allowed on the menu. Yeah. So to kind of like, I put myself, and he was quite angry. So like I had to put myself in his head of like, okay, like this is how I would do it, but he'd probably do it like this. So I'll do it like that, even though I don't like doing it like that, but it won't get on the menu unless I do it like that. So yeah, you're going to need someone who's in your brain a little bit. And I think that just takes a while to develop, just working someone closely.
What was one of those dishes, Simon?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Getting whole dishes on the menu there was pretty tough, but it normally would be like just little pieces. Like he loved potatoes. So if there's every dish had a fucking potato on it. So like if it was a new potato preparation, that would normally pass. It was like very French back in the day as well. So if it was something with fucking potato and butter, it'd make it on. Some of it was, especially later on, it was just like how you plate it was his. Yeah, like there's almost like no specific dish. There's just lots of little things that you have to kind of take into account to try and get away with stuff.
There you go. Nat, we'll sort of start wrapping up in a sec, but one thing that we do talk about here on the podcast a lot, and I guess that like a lot of our audience is very much the sort of hospitality industry, people that work at bars and restaurants and then also, like people that are interested in food and stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we talk a lot about is mental health. Mm-hmm. The hospitality industry has been completely flogged by this pandemic and is also one that is full of self-destruction in one form or another. Like there's plenty of toxic work cultures out there. There's a lot of drug use and alcoholism, things that we've sort of talked about before, but there's also a lot of, I think one of the cool things about the industry is how genuine it is and how people are allowed to be and encouraged to be themselves. It's not a workplace where you've got to bite your tongue and that sort of thing, you can't be yourself. But I mean, with experience, you know, with mental health issues, yourself and talking about those sorts of things openly and also, you know, drug use and sort of toxic behaviors and things like that.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not just going to ask you to give our whole listenership some advice, but what are some of the things that have worked for you in that space to sort of get to where you are and to keep yourself level and keep yourself going?
It's a trick. It's been a fucking journey of, you know, medications and therapists and relationships and things that have had to change. And I'm one of those really high functioning messes, and you know, now I do just what I got to do to get through at the moment. I'm okay today, for example, but I have things I do, like there's that boring shit like exercise that I like that as a meditation because it fucking shuts my head up and it gives me something to. I'm always getting a bit better. I like getting better at something. Makes me feel like I'm okay, like I'm not going backwards, which often your mental health, you know, makes you feel like you are going backwards, dragging you into the fucking the ass of the earth, just feeling like you're a fucking loser. I talk fucking relentlessly about what's going on for me, and I'm lucky that I'm able to do that, and I don't feel shame about. I feel, you know, shame about, you know, some things in my life, like everyone does, but, you know, fucking struggling with drug abuse and things like that is not a proud moment of mine. But there's like, it's the talking. The talking is what helps. And I've got a really amazing partner and some really beautiful friends and a great therapist and stuff. And I fucking talk about it and I bring it up, you know, and I've seen that that helps people, you know, when you say like, hey, or saying, are you fucking all right, you know, even without the answer to what's going on for your mate or whatever, being able to just go, I kind of get it. I kind of get what you're going through without knowing what to say, or I can hear you. Just being able to talk, keep conversation going. It seems a bit trite and cliche or whatever, but it's fucking true. Like if you're not having a good time, putting up and shutting up is fucking bad news because it just fucks you up more.
Yeah. And that's been the go in hospitality and restaurants is that you just shut up, you get on with it, and then you know you come back the next day and you do the same. And it happens with a lot of chefs, young and old, I was about to say young chefs, but it's chefs across the board. They don't talk till it's too late, until the kind of the snap happens or something goes down, and you've got to get out there. And you know, hopefully now the industry is trying to be a bit more accepting and trying to be a bit nicer because we've got fuck all staff and we need to attract people. So there's no point, you know, keeping it in. You've got to talk and you can work out how to make it better. I think that's definitely key, is to have someone, something, some vent, somewhere to talk to about things like that.
Yeah, fucking oath. Before you crack and you're fucking useless for yourself, you're too cooked. You've just fucking have a meltdown, you know, which happens, and it's okay that you do. You get through it if you can, but yeah, having a stop button or a fucking pull the handbrake a bit is hugely necessary. I don't know what it's like to work in a kitchen, and that stress is not something I can speak to. But I do hope that there's stuff in place and you have a relationship or a person that you can talk to when you're like, fuck this shit, because I bet you there is a shitload of I've had a fuck enough of today going on in kitchens and hospitality. I've worked in moments in hospitality just behind a bar and knowing what it's like dealing with fuckwits there is like, does your head in. Like, I don't know. I can't imagine what it's like. I hear horror stories about just being worked to the fucking bone and just shut up, just do it, you know? It's fucking tough. It's really tough and really admirable that people get through a tough time in high stress environments, particularly at the moment. Everything's a bit fucking weird, you know? Yeah.
Weird 2 years. I think hospitality and the arts, as it were, has been tough on everyone.
It's interesting in hospo as well with, you know, what we're talking about, how there's a lot of youngsters in there, you know, like there's a lot of people that there's like apprentices that might have just finished year 10, you know, and then people in their teens, in their early 20s and things like that. And I think that like us being the older generation, maybe take it for granted a little that we kind of have a bit more of a, you know, a self-image. We know who we are a little bit, which gives you the confidence to be able to talk to people about issues. But if you're 17 and you're stuck in a kitchen and you're kind of living in a share house or something like that, and you're being told to fuck off by the chef who's supposed to be your boss and mentor, like it's a pretty tough place. So I think driving home that message of like finding people, especially for the youngsters, finding people to talk to.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Because, I feel sorry for the youngins sometimes.
Oh, fucking oath. Brave new world shit. Like, you're just fucking trying to become self-sufficient and, you know, and learn a craft. And you've, you know, getting that aggressive fucking get fucked. The world is so much like that at that age too. Like, everything seemingly is telling you to get fucked, you know?
last 2 years have been saying to get fucked.
Right? Yeah, such a stacks on of emotion and fucking trying to feel respected and part of something as a young person is so fucking tough. So fucking tough. Jeez, I was fucking wrecked at that age. Whoa. Yeah, that's amazing.
The pressures of social media probably compounded as well. I think it's a lot easier for us older folks to just look at social media and disregard any of the shit that's on there and just kind of be like, yeah, that's just dickheads, insecure dickheads being fuckwits, yeah. like, and not take it to heart so much. You know, you kind of learn that, but it must be tough to wade through that shit as a youngster as well.
There's a lot of conversation going on there, isn't there? You know, social media is fucking relentless.
How's it been for you, Nat? Like, because you've probably got trolls and shit like that by this point as well. Like, do you read your comments and your social media and your DMs and all that sort of thing? And like, how do you navigate all that sort of stuff, particularly? You know, you might be having a bad day and then you've just got the wrong person saying the wrong thing that could set you off. Does that sort of stuff happen? And how do you?
Yeah, definitely. That definitely happens. Part of what I'm doing is to engage, you've got to engage with people because that's the point. You know, I'm trying to have conversation. I will reply to as many comments as I can. And of course, there's fuckwits in there just saying stupid shit and people trying to wind you up, you know, like that troll thing. So, you know, shitheads that are fucking bored and got nothing to do but stir you up, and they get a rise out of you and then love it. Mm. I'm pretty good. I've been doing it for a while now. I can see there's a few boundaries, I suppose, I have, and it's important to set boundaries in your fucking life, as cliche as it sounds. One of them is if I'm feeling like shit and I'm not like I'm of a high anxiety day, is stay the fuck away from the comments section and the DMs. The DMs there, like I have... You know, I do have my partner help me with some of this stuff, but like just it's not normal for someone to have conversations with hundreds or thousands of people a day. It's not normal, particularly for any brain to compute that much shit. So like if I've just dropped a video, I'm there to let's chat about it because I'm in that space and ready to go. People leaving comments, this is awesome, love this about it. That's great. Even like, oh, I liked that a bit more than the other thing. I'm listen to that stuff, but like overwhelmingly positive, which is great. But I'm not going to like, you can dig for trouble at any point and there is always someone fucking saying some stupid shit or something to wind you up. And it will make you self-analyze if you're that way inclined, which I am, just highly critical of myself. It's like, oh, fuck. Yeah, you're setting yourself up for a fucking meltdown.
Yeah,
so I tend to dodge it if it's, you know, you got to be in your space and that's my workspace. Do the work and then fuck off because I don't communicate privately over social media much anymore because it's just my real life has to stay away from social media because it's a fucking another world that has all the entitlement possible in it. People... fucking think that you're not real and will leave comments accordingly.
Mm. Yeah, I had to stop just reading reviews altogether as a restaurant. It was 99% great reviews, but I would ignore them and go straight to the middling one or the bad one and obsess about that. So in the end, I was like, because if I'm going to read the good ones, I kind of got to read the bad ones. So I'm just going to read none of them. And then if it's something I need to address, bring it to me. If not, not going to bother. Don't bother. It's just, it's too much. Like I just find just be confident in what you're kind of doing.
Yeah.
And in what you're putting out. And then some people like it, some people won't like it.
That's it. That's going to be the way it is. Exactly right. And it's does the situation call for you needing to look at that stuff?
Mm.
You know, do I need to be looking at fucking 6,000 comments, or do you need to be looking at stacks of fucking reviews? Do you need to be, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Why are you there in some moments? You're like, why am I here? You're looking for trouble, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
That's a bit self-sabotaging. Maybe it's kind of trying to trip yourself up a bit. Mm. Like, I feel like I'm doing well. Let's go look for something that says I'm not.
Yeah,
I make myself feel like shit. It's tricky.
It can almost never end well as well. Like that type of engagement, like if you choose to engage with things, like there's no positive outcome possible. There might be, you might get a neutral outcome occasionally, but you're very, very rarely going to have a conversation with someone that ends on a like, oh, well, I feel good that I just invested fucking 4 hours of my time in trying to talk sense into this person. Like,
No one's changing.
It's like
their
Google doctoring yourself. Like, yeah, you fucking, what do you want from this situation? Are you going to give yourself fucking rickets, or are you going to feel like, oh no, it's just something I don't need to worry about? I love a good Google doctoring.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just better to not do it if you're feeling unsteady on your feet here.
Yeah. It's just, it all ends up as just that it could be cancer. So it's just anxieties through the roof until you see the doctor. So,
yeah, oh my God. Oh my God. I am a fucking shocker with that.
Shocker. Yeah, go, Simon.
What's next for you now?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it, you know, are we going to see more stand up from you? Is it going to be a 50-50 split? Is it going to be, are you going to be on stage with a little kitchen doing your videos live? Like, what's the future looking like?
Yeah, we're booking a big tour for the next year, early next year. Fingers crossed we're all okay to be in a big space together. But that's booked, and I've got a new show. And there's, you know, like last time in the last show, I had a bit of we were using this thing called the Egg Master, which is like have you heard of the Egg Master? You crack eggs into it and it shits this fucking log of disgusting egg out. We have a good laugh about it. I want to do more of that stuff, have a good laugh. I'm trying to work out
kitchen
how to get
gadgets are just hilarious because some of them are just fucking useless. It's so,
so good.
Sad.
So fucking so weird and love it. Yeah, lots more stand up, lots more. Hopefully I get to play some shows with my band this year. It'd be fucking fun.
What's your band called? Tell us about your band.
My band's called DBX. It's a heavy band. It's just like a heavy kind of punk metal band. And
playing around Sydney.
Yeah, hopefully. My bass player's in New Zealand at the moment, but he's keen to come back and play some shows. At the moment, it's just fucking hard to book anything, but that's just the part of my life that I love, and it's low stress. And, yeah, more videos and more fucking epic shit. I want to get wilder and weirder, and the more things open up and, you know, the safer things are for me and everyone, the more kind of crazy shit we can do. You know, get out of the kitchen, still do the cooking things, and, you know, get wilder, meet some more people.
Cool.
Fucking make more people laugh. That's the mission. Exciting.
Plug the book.
Oh, yeah. I reckon. Death to Jarsals. Out now at all good bookshops.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. It's a good one. What's your, have you got a, like, give us an idea of some of the rest. Like, what are people cooking if they grab your book?
Well, I like to think of it this way. Like, let's say, like, meagering. That's a popular thing in a packet that you can probably cook otherwise. We've got some fucking meagering. So many people have messaged the page being like, can you make some honey mustard shit? Fuck yeah. So I've got a honey bastard chicken in there. Fucking with... yeah, we've got fucking, I've done some sweet shit. We've even got a pav in there.
Oh, yeah.
Love a pav. Mighty pav.
Not too hard to make a pav.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. We've got some, there's just heaps of shit like that in there. Everything from fucking lasagna to coleslaw to chicken wings to fucking, yeah, the best roast potatoes out to fucking, you know, I reckon they're all just like, it's that menu where you'll definitely see something and you're like, fucking oath. Mm-hmm. I can cook that for myself or someone that's coming around. There's something in there, or just a laugh in there, you know.
Yeah. Awesome. Let's leave it there, Nat, mate. Legend. Thank you so much. Keep it up. It's awesome stuff. Love watching the videos. Love the cookbook. And good luck with the tour and whatever's next.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the chat. You guys are legends.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, mate.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's Simon_Evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.